I was trying to get you hip to some blues there, and that was Albert Collins in the middle of an elongated riff on If Money Was Trouble. This is Utrice Lead, and you're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. It is Friday, Free Your Mind Friday, on your favorite station, PRN.FM. A couple of notes before we get into the phone calls, as you know, at 888-874-4888. This is the day that you decompress, you rid your mind of all of that luggage that they have put into your mind all week, trying to confuse you and throw you off kilter and to have your brain cells agitated for no reason at all. And still, you kind of have to make sense of the universe all by yourself. So we'll be talking about that in a minute, but a couple of things. I will be here tomorrow. It's my final day before heading back to the so-called sunshine state. Sun hasn't been shining lately down there. It's hurricane season approaching. But we still have seats. You must call and reserve a seat for tomorrow at 646-926-5422. I'm hoping to meet with really serious people, progressive people who have a desire to truly immerse themselves or re-immerse themselves in this business of constructing and reconstructing movements and community. And I'm hoping that I would meet you and we would get together and at least on a social level begin the process of knowing each other and exchanging thoughts and ideas. We will be engaging in serious talk tomorrow, and it will be a start of something. We don't know yet what it would be because it would be the byproduct of whoever is in the room, but you should be in the room. Call and make a reservation for your seat at 646-926-5422. I was out in Newark, New Jersey yesterday, and will be out there again this evening at REFAL headquarters. REFAL headquarters is at 269-271 South 9th Street in Newark. I'll be there at 6 p.m. tonight. A really wonderful discussion yesterday with Lead Story listeners, and it was just a joy to be in their company. It was just absolutely marvelous to be with them. So tonight again in Newark, New Jersey at 269-271 South 9th Street in Newark, and I'll be there 6 p.m. sharp. We'll start on time. So I'm a real on-time kind of person. I like being on time. So hopefully we'll have that. So tomorrow, I'm looking forward to being in the company of people who are going to be coming from the tri-state area, hopefully, right here. I urge you to call 646-926-5422 and reserve your seat because that's the basis on which we'll be operating tomorrow. Because seating is limited, and we really have a small, cozy space, and we want the people who are really serious about getting together to be in those seats. 646-926-5422. I also want to extend my heartfelt thanks to those of you who have responded to an appeal to support PRN.FM, and particularly also to supporting lead stories. I have a vested interest in expanding this program. It appears to be appealing to many people, and I want to expand the universe a bit. And it takes some resources to do some of those things. So in your support, it would allow me to do just that. So those of you who have responded, I thank you so much. And I got wonderful messages from those of you who at this time couldn't, but it's your heart. Your heart is in the right place. And you have no idea how wonderful it is to receive those messages of support. And I do understand the situation. But I am asking you, anyway, those of you who can, sometimes maybe you would be able to do more than $50. If you can, that would be great, because it probably would make up for the stress of others who can't do so at this time. So if you can, make a donation to PRN.FM. Let people know that you are a Lead Stories listener standing up and protecting both the station and this program. And you call 877-627-5065 to make your pledge. And just say, we want to support the station. We want to surround the station. We want people to know at the station, PRN.FM, how important it is to your lives every day. There's so much that you get out of it. And it is great to stand up and say, we surround you at this time. 877-627-5065, alternatively, 646-926-5422. In both instances, whether you call the 877 number or the 646 number, let them know that you are a Lead Stories listener reporting for duty. Okay, so let's go one more time so we get all of that out of the way. Tonight, at REFAL headquarters in Newark, New Jersey. I'll be there at 6 p.m. sharp. We'll be starting 269-271 South 9th Street. And that's REFAL headquarters in Newark, New Jersey. Tomorrow at 1 p.m. right here at PRN.FM. And you call 646-926-5422 to reserve your space. It's a limited seating, so we want as many people to show up, of course, but we want to be sure that we don't hold out seats that are not going to be occupied. So please do reserve your seat, 646-926-5422. I'll be talking to people who are serious and who want to really re-engage in this process of helping communities rebound and begin to thrive again, but also helping us to open up our vision about the roles that we can play and should play in creating this sense of community. 646-926-5422. And now the phones belong to you at 888-874-4888. We take your calls and you tell us where it is you want to go, what you want us to consider, your pristine analysis of the issues of the day. We start off in Berkeley with Harvey. You're on the air.
Hello, wonderful Eugene.
Hello, wonderful Harvey. How are you doing?
Very good. And it sounds like you're having a good time in New York.
Oh, man. I'm working myself into the ground, but I'm loving it.
Happy for you. I'm happy for you. Well, I'd like to present another aspect of who we are. The other day, I went to my favorite search engine and entered the words, how many cells are there in the human body? And it turned out that there were around 37 trillion cells in the average human body. But that wasn't the shocker. That's a big number, 37 trillion. A trillion is 1,000 billion. So that's really a lot of cells. But it turns out that for every cell in our body, for every one of us, that there's 10 microorganisms like bacteria. So 1 to 10, they outnumber us. And so I think of myself more as a community of living entities. And these
Harvey, you are your own community, is it?
unbelievable amount of community here. And these microorganisms, they coexist in within our body. And in a sense, like, for instance, in the gut, they help the acidophilus bacteria help break down our food so that we can absorb the nutrients. And they work in our favor. And I feel that these microorganisms, these trillions and trillions and trillions of microorganisms in each and every one of us, they could possibly constitute a consciousness. And, you know, we even have words in the language, too, to reflect that. You know, I have a gut feeling about this, mm-hmm. or coming from the gut, which means the truth, the bottom line. On a gut level, people say, well, on a gut level, what do you think of this? You know, it means the very, and he's a gutsy guy. There's a lot of association with the gut in our language. And so I feel that sometimes my gut would tighten, and it's, to me, it's like a warning system saying, Harv, I can't tell you the problem right now, but I feel there's something negative in the environment, so be careful. And I listen to my gut feeling, and it seems to work so far for me. And I feel that that Gary is so good because he leads us towards the right microorganisms, the right way to treat our body, and he leads us to good nutrition and cell harmony. And I feel that it's literally good to be good to yourself, and it's all for one and one for all. Thanks, Yutri.
Thanks a lot for giving us the guts of your opinion there. Thanks so much, Harvey. From Florida, Rob, you're on the air.
Hello, Yutri.
Hi, how are you?
Good. I wanted to say thank you and to the PRN listening audience for all the education you've given me for the past 8 months. I've been listening for 8 months and haven't had a chance to call. So luckily today I was able to, and I wanted to take advantage of it.
Thank you so much. What do you have to share today?
What I wanted to talk about was Tuesday's show that you had with Gary, and you both were talking about the tale of two different cities. And it just reminded me of, I'm from Chicago. That's where I grew up. I currently live in the Clearwater area in Florida now. And it reminded me kind of what I've experienced. And I'm sure Henry from Chicago would be able to attest to this, that at least in the suburbs, what I noticed that was going on in Chicago is they would take homes and say if there's a home that's valued at around $300,000, they'll come to the seller, ask them to sell the house, so they can tear it down, and they can build an $800,000 house on there. Mm-hmm. And they're doing it everywhere. They're pricing everybody out of everywhere. Mm-hmm. They basically want individuals who, you know, have a net worth of $250,000 or make $250,000 a year or millionaires in the area, and they want everyone to leave everywhere. And what I see here in Clearwater is I see a lot of houses in my area that just a block of them will go up for sale. And, you know, my fiance will ask me, well, why do you think that is? And really what I think it is, it's because there's so many people around here that are just hanging on by a thread. There's no jobs here, and they're relying on two incomes to support their lifestyle. And as soon as someone loses their job, there's no other job to be had, so they have to move. I've never seen anything like it as far as where I'm at. You'll see three or four houses go up for sale immediately.
Wow.
And the other thing I would say is you probably wonder when you saw in New York, well, what's the end game? What are they trying to transform that into? And from listening to your show, I gather that you live in Southeast Florida.
Yes.
And I would tell you, because I used to live there, I lived in Palm Beach County for 4 years. I would tell you to go take a visit through Palm Beach County.
Oh,
because
yes,
that's the end game.
I'm quite familiar with it. I see what it is. It's truly a night and day kind of comparison.
It's unbelievable. I mean, it's either you have money or you have no money. And I think that's what they're trying to turn everything into. And, you know, that was one of the reasons I wanted to move out of that area, because I didn't like it, and I didn't like the emphasis on material things and money and prestige. So,
but
I wanted to call to free my mind about.
Thank you. But let me ask you this: do you get a sense that this is individual initiative, or this is a kind of collective effort that is going on, an organized effort, as in, for example, do you see developers engaging in this, or do you see this as individual owners taking their own initiative to capitalize on an appropriate moment to make ridiculous amounts of money as profit?
I see it as, I can at least attest to, in the Chicago area, it was one particular developer who did this. He would go to you and say, look, the land is worth, if I can tear down your dwelling, then your property has more value to me than the actual dwelling that's on there. Mm-hmm. I mean, how would you like to hear that as a homeowner? So I think that's what it is. And with my job, that's the other thing. I see, just, I'm a financial investigator, so I see how fragile people's financial situation is all the time. And it really has opened my eyes to, you know, an example would be, I did a foreclosure rescue investigation and interviewing 50 people and them telling me how they came into foreclosure. When I walked away from every conversation, I kept thinking to myself that I could be in their shoes tomorrow.
Does that in and of itself surprise you? Because, you know, in this area of foreclosures, a couple of years ago, one would have associated that with low-income people or middle-to-low-income people, working poor and working people. But increasingly, you see more people who used to classify themselves as middle-class or middle-income or even upper-middle-income falling into this bracket. Do you meet many people of that ilk who years ago could never have foreseen themselves being in the situation as they are today with regard to foreclosure?
I think so, because the cost in everything we need in life is going up. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, I would recommend everybody to read a book called The Seven Sins of Wall Street. It's by a Bloomberg News reporter who talks about all of the banks and that they're continuing to do what they did in 2008. And a perfect example of that would be, I purchased a home a little over a year ago, and I'm not going to get into the specifics of my financial situation, but I'll just say this. They approved my fiance and I for a $450,000 loan, which is absolutely ridiculous. I would have never been able to afford something like that in a million years. We looked at each other and thought they were joking.
Wow. So did you take it?
I'd be out on the street if I took it. Wow. I'd be foreclosed on very quickly. I mean,
wow.
We looked at each other and said, this is irresponsible of them.
Wow.
So, and I would tell people to read that book, because that's what's going on still. They're still doing this. And I think, you know, I think it's a combination. I think some people say, look, I'm able to afford this type of house, so I'm going to go get that. And they are not responsible enough to say, look, I can't afford that. I think that's part of it, but I think the biggest part of it is, you know, the cost and everything going up, but our wages aren't going up.
Exactly. Well, thank you, Rob, for calling in today. Very instructive and a really good snapshot of where things are in Florida. And, you know, typical of a lot of places where the housing bubble burst, and Florida was one of the leading parts of the country where this housing bubble burst for exactly this kind of speculation and getting people into taking out loans that they can't afford to buy houses that they won't live in for too long. Thanks so much.
And thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And I'll definitely call again, because I could talk to you a little bit more about that with Homeowners Association. So there's definitely more discussion to be had in the future.
Thank you so much. And thank you for your offer. 888-874-4888. It's your turn to free your mind. Sarah from Dallas, you're on the air.
Greetings to you, Yatri.
Thank you, and to you too. Yes, I like the way you usually very formally announce greetings to you. You never say hello. You always say greetings. I like that.
Thank you very much, Yatrice, and I must say I wish you safe passage back to your destination.
Thank you so much.
Yes, you are so welcome, and as well as greetings to the PRN listening audience. Utrecht, that young man that just got offline, he touched on a topic that's very near and dear to my heart, because I also work in the financial sectors industry, and I deal a lot with people and their getting their finance, because I work as a auditor, as well as I'm an enrolled agent. I represent clients before the IRS if they have any kind of issues dealing with state taxations as well as federal taxes. So I get to see into a lot of their personal finances. And what he has said, it is very true. It's something that I've seen crept across and been creeping across this country. Because a lot of times they put people into these homes and a lot of things that they have been pushing you, Teresa, that I've seen that have cropped up within the past 20, I would say between 20 to 30 years, is these insurance that they're telling you, in case you become unemployed, it will pay your bills, such as your car notes and disability insurance and all of these type of products that they're selling after market. And they're getting people into buying these things as an add-on in the event that you become unemployed or you can't pay your mortgage or whatever. And a lot of people, they get into these things because these financial sector companies, they make big money. Because if they can get you to move into a house that you can ill afford to keep up with, they know that you can't afford it, but they're going to put you in there. You're going to partially have to pay off that loan. Mm-hmm. Then whatever additional insurance coverage that you might have that might keep you stringing you along for maybe another 6 to 9 months and pay on it, and then eventually the bank comes in, take it over, and put you out on the street. But then in the meantime, they got a lot of that loan taken care of for them. Because your mortgage insurance company, they carry on mortgage insurance on the property, they're going to keep paying for it, because while that property is sitting out there, a lot of times you see property sitting vacant for a year or whatever, it is still being taken care of. Your mortgage company that took foreclosure and took it over, they have to keep up with it. So they are paying on it until the next sucker comes along and they take it over. Yes, because that's what they do. And then they start the vicious cycle going all over mm-hmm. again. Mm-hmm. But you see, what we are looking at here, you treat, is the fruit of the poisonous tree. Because a lot of people in this country, you're sitting on land that you did not properly get. You stole, sitting on stolen land, and then these stolen assets have been passed down from generation after generation, and then it has become so convoluted right about now that people want to say, okay, this has been in my family for 150 years, but what about the people who have been on this land for 10,000 years whose property it was taken from them, and you just happen to have it? You didn't pay. You did not give them anything for this property. You just came here, took squatter's rights, and you end up taking over the property. And then you end up selling it in bunches. So this is a situation that we are continuously going to be on in this country, you treat, until these people that decide, okay, that they need to go ahead and make proper restitution in order to get things back, to get this ship back on solid footing.
And when will that happen? When, as they say, an asbestos rat is being chased by a celluloid cat through hell?
that sounds like it's Utrecht, because you cannot be so greedy, Utrecht. And what I keep telling white people is that y'all are the ones who's going to feel the crunch of it more so than us, because a lot of us black people and other people of so-called color, if they like to throw us into that pot, we've always been like 1 foot away from falling back into indentured status, where we know that our finances is not as great. So a lot of us, we have to be conservative in our spending habits. But a lot of the
I have to challenge you on that. $1.3 trillion being spent this year alone on consumer items, it does not suggest that African Americans in any way are being responsible about their spending.
Well, Utrecht, if you look at it like that, most of that $1.1 trillion is going on living expenses,
No, it's going on consumable items. It's going on what the, you know, this phenomenon that I just recently discovered. I did not know that the African Americans had disposable income. This was new to me because everybody I ever knew had no money to dispose of. But actually, the African American community exceeds all other communities, ethnic communities, in spending habits, spending money needlessly and uselessly and quite irresponsibly.
Exactly, Utrice, because you cannot spend yourself into prosperity. That's the whole problem. You've got to save in order to be prosperous. And if we are spending money on in every community, we are helping them to advance based on our lousy spending habits. So saying that we have all of this disposable income that we are spending on food, housing, shelter, cars, you know, it's mostly depreciated assets that we are spending this money on. Because that necklace that you just went into the store and you spent $3,000 and $4,000 for, if you were to go back and try and sell it at a pawn shop or whatever, you're not even going to get half of that you just wasted on that jewelry.
Well, you made a strong point today, Sarah, on real estate and the criminal element, building on Rob's point. So thank you so much for your contribution today.
You're welcome.
Thank you. From New York, Joel, you're on the air.
Hi, Utrice. How are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you today?
I'm very good. Very good. You know, I've been thinking about what's been going on in the Middle East and the Ukraine over the past, say, 12 to 18 months, and I can only shake my head. You know, when I think about the Ukraine and maybe about a year and a half ago, it was in bad shape. It was collapsing at about the same steady pace that it had as it had, you know, been ever since its independence a couple of decades ago. But it's now a truly defunct state. Its economy is in free fall. It's lost one region. There are two more that are in open rebellion, and much of the country is being terrorized by these oligarch-funded death squads, these Nazi death squads, and as well as American-anointed puppets nominally in charge, but quaking in their boots about what's coming next. Who knows how long Poroshenko is going to last?
But the leadership there is just loved by the United States. In fact, the United States made it a point, the president made it a point to stop in Ukraine and his last European tour to assure them of U.S. support, continued U.S. support.
But since then, people have, the odds are even that he's going to last another few months. Even the right sector and Svoboda are beginning to sour on him. So the situation there is very, very unstable. And in Syria and Iraq, if you think about where Syria and Iraq were 18 months ago, there was a kind of low simmer there. But now, of course, both have erupted into full-blown war, and large parts of both countries are now under the control of the Islamic Caliphate, which, of course, was formed with the help of the United States, armed with U.S.-made weapons via the Iraqis. If you think of Libya post-Gaddafi, it seems to be working on establishing an Islamic Caliphate of its own. And against this backdrop of profound U.S. foreign policy failure, Washington recently saw it fit to accuse Russia of having troops on NATO's doorstep. I think that was the phrase they used, as if this had nothing to do with the fact that NATO had expanded east all the way to the Russian to Russia's borders. And it's not surprising that U.S.-Russian relations have now reached a point where the Russians saw fit about a week ago to issue a stern warning, not really reported very much in the corporate media, that further Western attempts at blackmailing them may result in nuclear confrontation. And I think that, Utrice, that American behavior throughout this succession of defeats has been remarkably consistent, with the constant element being their flat refusal to deal with reality in any way, shape, or form. You know, as in Syria, the Americans were looking for a so-called moderate, pro-Western Islamist government who want to do what the Americans want, that is to topple the government of Bashar al-Assad, but will stop short of going on to destroy all the infidel invaders they can get their hands on. In fact, such moderate pro-Western Islamists do not seem to exist. That doesn't affect the American strategy in the region anyway.
Well, I have to ask you. I have to ask you a question. I mean, things took a very, very dangerous turn. I am, as you know, on this program, I've talked about how terrifying it is that the U.S. continues to make these reckless decisions, and you know, just matter of fact, no big deal. Everything is under control. No problem. No need to worry. And yet they have so escalated the situation that the fallout could be devastating. Recent move to arm the Kurds, and it's reported very casually, the United States has basically delivered aid, they said, aid to the Kurds. So now what the United States has actually been doing is arming the internal, the next level of war, which is to escalate the so-called civil war, which isn't really a civil war. It is an effort to topple the Assad regime and to replace the regime in Iraq with internal rebellion. So I'm just amazed that the administration is getting away with this and that this is being done in the open. Going into two countries, two sovereign countries, neither of which has declared war against the United States, under the premise that we are attacking a third party that happens to be located within these two countries, and nobody has given permission to do any of the bombing that has been going on and the killing that has been going on. And now to literally engage in a full-blown effort. When they arm, supposedly, the arm the Kurds in order to beef up the resistance against the Islamic State, supposedly. What, are they going to ask for these weapons back when it's all over? Are they going to have a weapon recall and say, okay, we got you the weapons to accomplish this mission. Now we need them back. Is that going to happen?
Well, you know, there are good Kurds and bad Kurds. Remember that. I mean, we've been arming Turkey to fight the PKK within Turkey for almost 30 years now.
And Turkey itself has said, when you are arming the Kurds, you are, in effect, arming the next wave of attack against us. So
that's right. Well, you know, what I wanted to do, just to finish up, was to connect what's going on in the Ukraine with what you're talking about, and maybe even included to Afghanistan, because in the Ukraine, we've heard about this heavy American investment in what they call freedom and democracy, or what have you, and this has produced a government that's dominated by Nazis, and a civil war within the Ukraine that, according to the United States, is just some Russian propaganda. And when you think about these Nazis, they're parading under the banner of Hitler's Ukrainian SS division. I think I spoke about that about a month ago on your program. And they're anointing Nazi collaborators as national heroes. That's not convincing enough for Washington. What do these Nazis have to do to prove they're Nazis? Build ovens? Roast Jews from the Ukraine? It seems that just massacring people by setting fire to a building, as they did in Odessa, or shooting unarmed civilians in the back and buzzing them into mass graves, as they did in Donetsk, doesn't seem to matter that much. And the fact that many people in Washington refuse to see this, and that many people in Donetsk in the East have refused to be ruled by Nazi thugs and have successfully resisted them, has caused the Americans to label them as pro-Russian separatists. And this, in turn, was used to blame the troubles in Ukraine on Russia and to impose sanctions on Russia.
Well, Gerald Horn, as you may recall, he first raised that issue here a long time ago on the fact that these were open Nazis, that the United States was actually actively supporting Nazis.
That's right.
And we had, I forgot her name, running around.
Victoria Nuland.
Victoria Nuland, distributing cookies to the Nazis.
A woman who calls herself Victoria Nuland. Her real name is Noodleman. She's actually Jewish.
I know.
That's what's so amazing about it.
It is so bizarre on so many levels, and I just can't understand how in the United States we have not had anybody to rein in this government for doing these reckless things and no accountability.
You know, Eutrice, this has been going on all my life. As you were talking about this, my mind just flashed to when I was about 14 years old. I was a high school student. I kept asking my history teacher why Wernher von Braun, the physicist who was responsible for the V1 and V2 bombings on Britain, and who was a high elite member of the SS, why he was leading the American Mercury program just 12 years after World War II had ended. And I got no good answer. So this has been going on forever. I just wanted to say one last thing and then get off. It struck me that the Americans invaded Afghanistan because the Taliban wouldn't relinquish Osama bin Laden, who, of course, was a CIA operative, unless Americans produced evidence implicating him. But, of course, this evidence didn't exist. Then we invaded Iraq because Saddam Hussein would not relinquish his weapons of mass destruction, which, of course, didn't exist. Then we invaded Libya because Muammar Gaddafi would not relinquish official positions, which he didn't hold. So then they were ready in 2013 to invade Syria because Bashar al-Assad had used chemical weapons against his own people, which he didn't do. And now they impose sanctions on Russia because Russia had destabilized and invaded Ukraine, which it didn't do either. So this is the we are in a situation where unreality becomes reality and where fantasy becomes reality. And when you couple that with the objectives that they have, you have unbelievable recklessness, irrational recklessness.
This is an amazing thing that we are so calm as a nation in the hands of a bunch of people doing unbelievably crazy things.
That connects with what you've been talking about all week with the passivity of people in communities that are under assault. This is no time to be passive, in the situations, considering the situations that we face.
Thank you, Joel, for your call today.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you. We go to Chicago. Henry, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing, Trey?
Fine, thank you, Henry. How's life?
Life is good. You know, this is what's so great about the show, because actually, I wasn't planning on calling in today, but when I heard Rob from Florida, you know, saying that he was from Chicago, I wanted to share three personal things about real estate and, you know, what he was talking about in Chicago. Well, you know, I grew up on the south side of Chicago in a particularly dominant black neighborhood. And I remember back in the early 90s. Now, the thing about my father was, he was very staunch about, you know, the one bill he always said that you always pay is your rent or mortgage. Well, apparently what happened was he got a letter from his mortgage company saying that he was defaulted on his mortgage. So he was like, this is crazy. So I guess they thought that, you know, he might not have kept receipts, but he kept all his receipts of his mortgage payment. So I don't know what they were trying to do with him, but they were saying that he was behind three months in mortgage, so he had to, you know, at the time fax over the receipts to the mortgage company. And apparently they came back and said that he was default in three more months. So, you know, this kind of raised the antenna for me. It's like, were they trying to strong arm him, you know,
yes,
from his house?
Yes. And
I was like, that was crazy, because, like, my father is very staunch about paying his rent.
Well, that was a common tactic used in many black areas, or many areas that had become strongholds for African Americans and were considered the upgrade from, the working class to the semi-middle class African-American communities who by then had been established. Many of the mortgage companies began to be disturbed about that, and they decided by hook or by crook to reclaim those communities. And one of the scams used was to claim that the properties had gone into foreclosure for lack of payment of mortgages and so forth. And in fact, many companies at that time did not issue receipts. Many African American homeowners didn't have receipts to show.
And see, that was the thing that saved my dad, because he used to pay his mortgage payments through money orders, and he kept all his receipts.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what basically saved him, because, you know, this was way before, you know, you get to pay your mortgage or rent online. Now, I want to share another thing. When he finally sold the house in 2007, That was when my, you know, a couple of years before my youngest sister had finally moved out. Him and my mother decided to go get an apartment because he couldn't maintain because he was up there in age. So when I was interested in buying the house, do you know that the company that bought the house, they remodeled the house and they put it on the market for $400,000. And I'm sitting here like, are you kidding me? You know, this is the house that I grew up in and you're selling it for, my dad bought that house in 1976 for about, I think he said he bought it for about $30,000. And it was on the market for $400,000. I was like, you guys are sick. I am not buying this house. And one more story I want to share with you in regards to real estate in Chicago. My wife's family grew up in Inglewood. Now, you know, as we all know, we always hear Inglewood in the news about being, you know, this, you know, high crime area. My wife told me that her oldest sister got a call from a real estate company asking her offering to buy the house for three times what it's worth. Now, mind you, the house is still owned by their family, but it's abandoned. So they're offering like three times more than what it was actually worth. So they decided not to sell because they know it's kind of like a gold mine now. So now they're in the process of trying to take the house by eminent domain.
I was just going to say that.
Yes. So they're in the process of fighting this now because they're trying to take it via eminent domain now. So I'm like, when Rob called about this, those three stories just like immediately popped up in my mind. So
we'll be talking about that next week. In reference to Ferguson and communities like Ferguson, how they became such communities, and we'll be talking about that. But we will also be talking about, when you mentioned foreclosures, as of next week, one-fifth of the population of Detroit is about to lose their home.
That's crazy.
It's maybe crazy, but it's on the way. And this is proof about the cycles. You drive communities down to a level where there is nowhere else to go but up. And by then, they have fantastic plans. They're willing to pour the resources in to keep the communities up and whatnot. The same resources that should have gone to the communities that were there. And now, imagine, and I just wanted people to understand this, one-fifth of a city is about to be basically thrown out in the street. 150,000 people do not have running water in their homes. And this does not constitute a crisis. So I don't know what it would take for people to understand what a crisis looks like.
Yes, yeah, that is a crisis.
Thanks, Henry, for your call. Thank you so much.
You.
From Los Angeles, DX, you're on the air.
Hello, Eutrice.
Hello.
How are you this wonderful day?
Fine, thank you. How are you doing?
Good. I'm doing fine. Thanks for asking. I wanted to call in today and talk about your show yesterday. It was a wonderful analysis of the situation going on in Ferguson. It was mostly about Michael Brown. And
Thank you.
I really did appreciate that.
Thank you very much.
When you were talking about the news media and how they're going to be, or they're already shaping this to get us ready for the inevitable,
mm-hmm.
which is no charges, I couldn't think of a stronger reason why we need to really stop patronizing this media and just dump them. Because if we keep on going for the same thing and people keep on watching it and keep on listening to their BS, they're just only going to keep doing it more. And I think the intensity of it, the reason they're working so hard at it, and this comes to one little part that I have to disagree with you with, is because they're fighting the realization amongst growing amounts of people that they're full of it. I don't think they have credibility, and that's what I would disagree with. I think their credibility is pretty much almost gone, especially stations like Fox who are so way far to the right. So I would say that their credibility is suffering, and that's why I don't believe cable and cable news is going to be around that much longer, probably only several more years, maybe 5 to 10 more years in total, because their credibility is at such an all-time low.
You're correct about that. A recent study showed that the most credible media outlets, in fact, are not American. They're the BBC and
Absolutely.
The Canadian Broadcasting Service.
Absolutely.
That's
and you've got stations like Al Jazeera and RT, Russian television, they're on the rise. Now, having said that, where are all these people going? Well, I don't know anybody under 50 who watches cable TV for news. I don't know anybody who is under, let's say, 45 years old that really thinks that these people are giving any kind of truth here. So I think it's mostly elderly people. And if I can lament, I can lament one thing about the digital revolution and being able to get your news online and being able to hear so many points of view and make a decision for yourself. If I can lament one thing about this whole digital revolution is that it hasn't been spread adequately enough in the elderly community, I don't think. I don't think it's accessible enough, and that's something we should work on. I think more elderly people watch cable TV and listen to the radio, and that's a real problem. Because here's what would happen if we got people on a mass level to stop patronizing these. First of all, let me say that Fox News is the leading. Now think about this: Fox News is the leading outlet, has more viewers than any other news outlet,
correct?
Internet or cable or stellar radio.
Yes, but their audience still has not grown outside its stated ideological parameters. It's just a conservative, right of center audience, and an older audience.
Absolutely, and the reason, and I think that some of those people are not hardcore, quote unquote, conservatives. I don't really call them conservatives. I call them wackos. But I don't think they're really hardcore Fox News watchers. I think people just flip on TV and boom, since it's the most watched and it's the most advertised and it's the most out there. But just a couple of figures. Among viewers of all ages, Fox News was the only news outlet that grew last year. Amongst viewers of all ages, it grew 5%. Their daily viewership is somewhere around 1.7 million viewers. That's astounding, and that's up 5% from the year before. So the thing is, we keep giving these people credibility. I mean, they keep corralling us every time. We're about to go through the same thing again with the election, too. They keep corralling you into either supporting the Democrats or the Republicans, and they keep spreading all these lies every day. It's 24/7 lies, and I've said it before on this show a couple of times that the first thing I tell people is you need to get rid of that cable. You need to get rid of that television because it's 24/7 lies. That's all they do, especially Fox News, but all of them.
Well, the thing, too, is you look at it. You said that the medium is not democratic. In fact, it is too democratic. The medium has become so democratic that just about anybody can actually play the role of news producer or news reporter or a news executive, and people are. People are now selecting very, very carefully where they go to for information based on their perceived needs and the relevance of the information that they want. They seek out those avenues that are relevant to them. So the medium has empowered the consumer of information in ways that could not have been imagined before. It has opened up all kinds of possibilities in ways that could not have been imagined. And now it is so democratic that it will now begin the process of shutting down this democracy. It will close the windows. It will become more and more rigid, and more regulations will be placed so that it controls this medium, which it sees now as being way out of control. And that's where things are going. But you are absolutely correct about the fact that these cable networks, and when you add them all up, the other revelation that you get is actually they're not reaching that significant a population in the American media, in the American population. They're not reaching a huge number of people, but they are supposed to be reaching, in their view, and especially for advertisers, they're reaching populations that matter. They're reaching populations that are seen as decision makers, people who have some kind of sway over the political process and policy making. So to that degree, even though the sum total of their audience is small compared to the population that they could have in their midst, but they're still seen as being influential, and that's why they matter, and that's why it's
one
important.
One last thing, Treese. I agree. And one thing.
We can't have one last thing unless it's real fast. You go real fast, you get one last thing.
I would just say that we're in bad shape when Fox News' overall viewership among all ages goes up 5%, but MSNBC's goes down 14%.
And what about your favorite CNN? 39%. Yes.
Yeah, CNN down 39%. We're in big trouble.
Oh, well, I pointed out to you a long time ago that CNN is not the great thing that it claims it is. So
right,
there we are.
Yeah.
So that brings us to the end of our program. Thank you, DX, for bringing us to the end of our program today. Thank you. The callers were fantastic, and I thank you always for bringing the best of your thoughts to the program. Again, tomorrow, reserve your seat, 646-926-5422. I hope to see many of you here who are going to be engaging in some substantive discussion. 646-926-5422. I'll be talking at 1 p.m. and tonight at REFAL headquarters in Newark, New Jersey, at 269-271 South 9th Street, 6 p.m. sharp. Thank you so much. A pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company.
If trouble was mine, I'd swear I'd be a millionaire.